Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
That you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Riley,
and Nikki.
And I want to thank Duster, who's a silver level amplifier with us. Duster is giving at least $5 a month to the AMPS program, and that stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. So Duster is giving $5 a month to support Free Talk Live. And thank you so much, Duster. If you'd like to learn more about the AMPS program and sign up for yourself, you can go to amps.freetalklive.com. And thank you again, Duster, for supporting us. We really appreciate everyone who does.
Absolutely. Supporting Free Talk Live is extremely important this time around, because we're basically in a time period where freedom of speech is not as free and easy to come by, so we're on the radio giving you the opportunity to speak your mind.
Yep. I really agree. It's like a more important time than normal for standing up for freedom of speech. I mean, we are the only talk radio show like this at all.
We also are the only talk radio show on radio that has women as a panel. Like, I don't know of any other talk radio show on the radio that has a show where three women are hosting. And not to say that I'm a woman, but, you know, every other week we have Bonnie, Lori, and Nikki.
Yep.
And they're all women. And that's very rare in talk radio.
Oh, absolutely.
I never really thought about that. Like, I knew it's rare for Free Talk Live, but never really thought about it about radio specifically.
Talk radio is very male-centric, and it's just very unique that Free Talk Live has women hosts.
Yeah, it is definitely a very male-dominated industry. Yeah.
Well, in the last segment, what we do here is we bring up subjects we want to talk about, usually articles. But you can call in and bring up whatever is on your mind, and that's 603-283-6160. But in the last segment, we were reading this article that Riley brought in from Psychology Today, and it has sparked so many interesting conversations and thoughts within me, and this whole discussion with us three in the last segment. So, continuing here, it says, they say it is, they're discussing, I didn't explain what the article was. Their question is, does consciousness begin before birth, during birth, or shortly after? And it's all about the infant's brain's capability of conscious experiences. They say that it is even possible that birth itself triggers the onset of consciousness. Perhaps the first thing the newborn infant realizes is that the outside world is very unpredictable relative to the womb's environment. Things are constantly changing, and so the newborn must build a mental model of the world to adapt and predict things. Maybe that's why they just close their eyes.
Yeah.
I feel my friend just recently had a baby, and she had her eyes closed every time I would go to see her, and I first saw her the day after she was born, and I saw her pretty often, and her eyes were always closed, and my friend would talk about, like, oh, the baby's eye color, and I was like, does she, like, have her eyes open? And she would be like, yeah, she'll have her eyes open.
You're like, she's like a kitten where, like,
no,
her eyes are closed.
No, that's what I said. I was like, honestly, I didn't think much about it. Like, I had two siblings that were born when I was a teenager, but I wasn't thinking about that. Forgot, I guess. So I was like, wait, okay, it seems like her eyes are always closed. Wow, I just realized, like, she opens her eyes. Because it's like 90% of the time they have their eyes closed.
Well, every baby has a different personality. So it's funny, some babies will be born and then they're just like, kind of looking around the room, like, very inquisitively.
Wow.
And it's like, wow, that baby is just, like, really soaking it all in. And then some babies are born and they're crying. Some babies are born and, like you said, like, they just... And I think it depends on, like, the ambiance in the room, too. They don't like bright lights.
Hmm.
So if it's bright, you know, they'll more than likely have their eyes closed. And, and they do spend most of their time sleeping on and off. But, yeah, it's interesting because even right when they're born, they have their own different personalities.
Yep.
And even, you know, women who have had multiple children, I mean, you know, Bonnie, your mother has had multiple children, so she might even be able to tell you, different babies in utero will also have kind of different personalities where some of them move a lot, some of them don't, you know what I mean? So it's just, yeah, it's just really interesting.
And it's also interesting how somebody who's not talking can barely... It really move. Well, they move, but they're not, like, really in control of it. Their arms are, like, they'll flail and stuff like that. Like, they're not in good control of their body. Can have a perceptible personality. Like, my friend's baby is, like, 3 months old at this point and obviously has gone through so many different changes. But her, like, core personality we pointed out, like, on day two is still there. Like, we'll be like, oh, my God, she's so... I don't know how to explain it. She just is sassy. It's just a thing that was there even on day two that we're talking about, and it's still there.
Yeah.
Like, and that's something I was thinking of earlier that definitely makes me think, like, she's been conscious this whole time. So, like, she's just been unconscious, and then one day it's going to happen when she's 3 years old. I don't know. Maybe it happens different for different people.
I don't know. But they're not just, like, a blob.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they are, like, they're already a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know my girlfriend Alana can be kind of sassy.
I wonder if she's a sassy baby.
Yeah, I wonder. What the heck?
That's funny. Maybe her mom would say that. That would be so funny. It says, however, we don't rule out the possibility that consciousness might already start some weeks before birth. And it's a little weird. This article seems to be saying, like, oh, only some weeks. Like, not the entire time.
Right.
But my co-author, the author of this article, says, Dr. Julia Moser, currently at the University of Minnesota, has led work showing that third trimester fetuses appear to be capable of learning sequences of auditory beeps. When an auditory tone deviates from a pattern established earlier in the experiment, the fetus shows this surprise response in its magnetic brain activity. Wow. The neural activity shows a field deflection as if the fetus is saying, huh? That's crazy and so funny.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
It shows this picture here, which is worth pointing out, of it looks like a canyon and a sunrise and a river flowing through it, and it shows normal adult perception, like somebody with, like, 20/20 vision looking at that. And it shows the same thing, mostly blurred out, with just, like, the darkest parts looking dark and the lightest parts of the sunset looking lighter. And it's this infant perception. It says, how we adults see the world is very different from how infants see the world. And I guess that makes sense because their eyes are developing from not having to look at anything for 9 months. I don't know how long the eyes are around, but some months.
Yeah, I think the basis of the eyes probably develop around, like, 8 weeks maybe? Hmm. Maybe before that?
Our new paper also sheds light on what it is like to be a baby. We know that seeing is so much more immature. We know that seeing is much more immature in babies than hearing, for example. Furthermore, this work suggests that at any point in time, infants are aware of fewer items than adults and can take longer to grasp what's in front of them. But they can easily process more diverse information, such as sounds from other languages, than their older selves. Infants can perceive many things that adults cannot, like the differences between vowel sounds in a foreign language. By 10 months or so, we lose this ability as the brain decides these perceptual differences are no longer relevant and discards them. Wow, that's crazy.
That is really crazy. It's like the brain is shedding neurons or something.
It's like you are interested in something as a baby, but then your parents keep telling you, oh, that's not there, that's not real, this is that, and that is that, and you just decide to see it differently. So crazy. Says it's still unclear when exactly human consciousness begins, but we hope our paper will guide new research by reviewing what we already know and what questions remain. I'm fascinated by the question of whether infants or even fetuses can already dream. A promising new theory of dreaming is Eric Cole's overfitted brain hypothesis, which says that dreams are essentially scrambled versions of inputs from waking life that help with generalization learning so that you learn to recognize things in new contexts and new situations. Okay. A newborn has barely begun to learn anything yet, but perhaps they already dream about the sounds and smells of their mothers. If fetuses dream, perhaps they dream of the taste of the amniotic fluid.
Hmm.
Whoa. As I recently told Der Spiegel, which I guess is a magazine, dreams are weird, and fetal dreams, if they occur, are probably weirder than anything we can imagine. And that's the whole article, and that was a very, very interesting article. More so at the beginning of the, in the last segment, it sparked a lot more interest from us because it's just, I don't know, like, I feel like everybody has an opinion on it.
Yeah, it's very thought-provoking, too. And this is something, like, people don't always think about, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't typically think about infants having consciousness or babies having consciousness, especially when it comes to things like male circumcision. They're like, oh, well, they're not going to remember that, but you know, we're going to remember things like that.
They remember it in some way, and it, mm-hmm. and it's like I was saying in the last segment, it's not always you remembering with your thinking brain, but the body remembers, and that absolutely, I mean, that how could it not affect someone?
And even just things like when you're in the fetus, you're affected by it for the rest of your life. And one thing about it is that you could be affected by something for the rest of your life without specifically remembering every detail, like, oh, a fight between your mom and your dad and you're in utero.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's that you didn't even understand the language. All you understood was the vibes. It's sometimes like you wake up from a dream and it's really hard to remember because it was more vibes than images. Like,
yeah.
That happens to me all the time. But it could definitely change your whole life.
Yeah, you remember how you felt, but you don't necessarily remember the details of what happened.
Well, that was a really interesting article. I'm going to move on to this article from the AP. It says, the New York Times sues OpenAI and Microsoft for using its stories to train chatbots. The New York Times is striking back against the threat that artificial intelligence poses to the news industry, filing a federal lawsuit Wednesday against OpenAI and Microsoft seeking to end the practice of using its stories to train chatbots. And I think that's absolutely dumb, and nobody should be able to sue and win over this.
Oh, I agree. I think, you know, if AI companies want to train their chatbots to look at news or whatever and analyze it, why not? They should be allowed to.
I mean, these people are putting this on the internet, and it's not like it's not the same as plagiarism. Like, I can see the idea that plagiarism is wrong, not that I really believe in suing people over it, but I can see that it's not, like, a good, nice, cool thing to do. But it's not plagiarism, it's training the chatbots how to do things like the New York Times, and sorry, you're a household name. If somebody sits there and makes a parody, and their brain is a lot like the AI, you have no control over that.
Plus, it gives the chatbot to learn about the news and talk about it. Not necessarily talk about it, but, you know, if someone asks a question about a news article, it's going to be able to come up with something about it.
Yeah, like, hey, OpenAI, write a news article about Riley and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. And then they write a story about that, but it's written in a news article type format.
Right, as though it's written from the New York Times perspective.
Exactly. And the other thing about about these people that sue over stuff like this all the time, well, these entities, I guess, these corporations, I don't understand it because all it does is help your get your brand out there. Like, somebody can type, oh, write in the style of the New York Times, you know?
Yeah.
And I just don't understand cutting that off. It's so stupid, and I just hate the litigiousness of the United States. It's so bad. The Times says the companies are threatening its livelihood by effectively stealing billions of dollars.
Yeah, right. No, billions. It's not.
Well, maybe the New York Times beat should become more relevant and stop worrying about chatbots.
Yeah,
if that's happening, it has nothing to do with chatbots. And this is, like, another thing where, like, intellectual property, you know what I mean? Like, this is worse than intellectual property. It's like, no, I just don't understand. Like, if somebody can program a chatbot to write like the New York Times, that's not the same as being the New York Times.
Yeah, they're not
As the New York Times, they have so many more resources. They have so much more advertisement, like all of these things. I don't understand.
It couldn't possibly be threatening them. And even if it was, well, maybe it's time for the New York Times to die. You know?
And that's the thing. It's like, why are you so afraid of competition? You're the New York Times.
Yeah.
Yep. And the thing is, that's the thing about people suing people all day in the United States. It's just that I feel like there are certain things that should just die when it's their turn, when it's their time. Like we were talking about social media earlier. Maybe social media doesn't need to be on top forever. Like, there's nothing written in stone about that. It can eventually die.
It's the natural progression of things. And you'll see, like, where, you know, Facebook and all of these, you know, going back to social media, like, they are constantly changing and developing. And that's what you have to do in any industry. You have to stay relevant. You have to stay with the times.
But they want
to
just keep making money like they always did in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, tough.
Says the media has already been pummeled by a migration of readers to online platforms. I guess it means the media as in, like, newspaper outlets, but while many publications, most notably The Times, have successfully carved out a digital space, the rapid development of AI threatens to significantly upend the publishing industry. Web traffic is an important component of the paper's advertising revenue and helps drive subscriptions to its online site, but the outputs from AI chatbots divert that traffic away from the paper and other copyright holders. I don't believe that. Like, seriously, when was the last time either of you guys were reading the output of an AI chatbot's newspaper article?
Never.
I've never done it.
Seriously, never.
Well, yeah. The only time ever was when people were jokingly writing articles about Ian going to prison and stuff like that, or just the Crypto Six in general. So that has happened, but it's not like, oh, if they didn't do that, I would have been reading the New York Times.
Well, and that's the thing, like, to me, it's like, I wouldn't trust an AI to be able to report news accurately, I guess. I say the same thing about the New York Times,
right?
Which is why I don't pay any attention to the New York Times, but I think I would probably, I don't know, I just wouldn't trust an AI at this point to be able to, like, legitimately report on current events. Like, I would, because obviously they're just getting that information from somewhere else, so I would just go to whatever the source was.
Maybe an AI can help draft an article to make it look more professional, but that's about it.
Yeah, like, sometimes you get an article from, like, some other website, not usually, like, something like the New York Times or even AP, but something like the Daily Sun, I think, is one of those kind of, like, tabloidy, but trying to be newsy ones, or, like, New York Post, and you're like, was this written by AI? It probably was. Saving somebody time.
Yeah, sometimes it feels that way.
It definitely does. It says web traffic is an important component of the paper's advertising revenue and helps drive subscriptions to its online site, but the outputs from AI chatbots divert that traffic away from the paper and other copyright holders, The Times says, making it less likely that users will visit the original source for the information. These bots compete with the content they are trained on, said Ian B. Crosby, partner and lead counsel at Sussman Godfrey, which is representing The Times. An OpenAI spokesperson said in a prepared statement that the company respects the rights of content creators and is committed to working with them to help them benefit from the technology and new revenue models. And that's the thing, like, they shouldn't have to. They shouldn't have to be working with old newspapers to help them benefit from their new technology. It's just the Times.
Yeah.
Times.
Yep. Just The Times.
It's just how things are now. Like, you got to get over it. We don't have to, like, pay old people that sit around saying, like, I wish that the internet didn't exist. I wish we could go back to where the internet didn't exist. Do we have to give them money?
No, we don't.
It's stupid. Or just, like, you know, change the world for them. Like, you know what? You're right. We're not going to use the internet, okay? We're not going to use the internet because you don't like it that way.
To you to make you happy, okay?
It's just so silly.
And then the old people complain about the young people being fragile, so.
Right. But it's just that corporations are even worse about it. Like, these corporations believe that they need to be propped up even if they're a failure.
Well, yep. And they're used to getting whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And they're used to, like, ruling you know, ruling
their
industry.
They're used to being the old guard. They're used to being the prominent news sources, and now that they're dying, it's hard for them to find any relevancy.
Says, our ongoing conversations with the New York Times have been productive and moving forward constructively, so we are surprised and disappointed with this development, the spokesperson from OpenAI said. We're hopeful that we will find a mutually beneficial way to work together, as we are doing with many other publishers. And that's a really nice people PR way to say that these people are, you know, they suck.
Yeah, basically.
Microsoft did not respond to requests for comment.
Mm.
So I guess Microsoft is one of the other AIs.
Yeah, that's another AI developer.
Artificial intelligence companies scrape information available online, including articles published by news organizations, to train generative AI chatbots. The large language models are also trained on a huge trove of other human-written materials, which helps them to build a strong command of language and grammar and to answer questions correctly. And that's a good point. Like, could I sue and say, listen, OpenAI probably scraped my tweets. I could have a million followers and be making good money right now if OpenAI wasn't scraping my tweets off the internet. Could anyone do that? Like, even actually people with a million tweets, could they do that?
Maybe.
They really shouldn't let these people win this suit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it turns out. We'll have to follow it.
That's the thing. It could open up an entire can of worms that I don't think... I just really don't think it's necessary.
Yeah.
Says the technology is still under development and gets many things wrong. In its lawsuit, for example, the Times said OpenAI's GPT-4 falsely attributed product recommendations to Wirecutter, the paper's product reviews site, endangering its reputation. Like, if anybody reads something written by OpenAI and they're like, whoa, this is true, now I think badly of this company, Wirecutter. Well, then they're dumb, and it doesn't matter what they think.
It's important for us to remember that in this day and age, we have to vet everything that we read, and we don't really want to, but at the same time, it's important to do that.
Yeah, they could just write an article, educating people on stuff like that.
Yeah.
If they want to combat that. Microsoft has a partnership with OpenAI that allows it to capitalize on the company's AI technology. The Redmond, Washington tech giant is also OpenAI's biggest backer and has invested at least $13 billion into the company since the two began their partnership in 2019, according to the lawsuit. As part of the agreement, Microsoft's supercomputers help power OpenAI's AI research, and the tech giant integrates the startup's technology into its products. Wow, I had no idea that they were connected. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. You can bring up whatever's on your mind. More coming up. Don't go anywhere.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a tremendous price war among the major term life companies. Rates have dropped dramatically in the past few years. For example, a man age 45 non-tobacco user, $1 million of coverage is only $75 per month, level for the next 10 years. Or a man age 50 non-tobacco user can buy $500,000 of coverage for a monthly premium of only $110, guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. That's right, level rates for 20 years. And if you're smoker, we have great rates for you as well. At the Term Lifeline, we specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. So if you're looking for new or replacement term life insurance, call right now for a free quote.
Rates and availability may vary by state. Sample rate quotes are based on preferred non-tobacco underwriting exam required to qualify.
800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. That's 800-430-1891.
USA News Update. Maine's Secretary of State says she remains focused despite recent reporting about death threats made against her.
We have received threatening communications. Those are unacceptable.
This comes in the wake of her decision to drop former President Trump from that state's GOP primary ballot. While speaking to CNN over the weekend, Shanna Bellows said she intends to adhere to the process. A Georgetown University professor and longtime CIA analyst is claiming many in the U.S. intelligence community will be working against Republicans in the coming election cycle. Dr. John Gentry is also pushing his new book titled Neutering the CIA. He said if former President Trump becomes the GOP nominee, government intel operatives are likely to be working overtime to achieve his defeat in 2024. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
That you control, 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Riley,
and Nikki.
And we've been talking tonight about many different topics. That's how Free Talk Live is. We'll be on some topic about some article, and then somebody will call in and even change the subject, which is great. And actually tonight, or right now, we actually have a caller on the line. So David from New Mexico, what's on your mind?
Lots of stuff, Bonnie.
Like what?
I get that earliest. I got an earliest memory. But first of all, radio business news. The morons at Kotex Bloody Mess Radio in Golden Showers, Arizona. They had you on Monday through Friday, and they're replacing you with that Kate Daly annoying chick on the radio. Unfortunately,
Kate Daly.
Daly, yeah,
she's actually. So funny thing about Kate Daly is she broadcasts out of Southern Utah. I used to listen to her when I lived in St. George several years ago, but I just stopped listening to her because she became too much of a conspiracy kook. Mm. She became a Trumpite and was like, you know, dude, I don't want to listen to you anymore.
Wow.
You're not pro-liberty, you're pro-America. I can't take that. So I stopped listening to her. I mean, she's a nice lady, but I think she's too much of a statist for my taste. But anyway, go ahead, David.
And she's annoying. Her cadence when she speaks, she pauses after every word. She's like, and then.
Yeah.
That's horrible for radio, too. Yeah.
Wait, are you saying you like my voice more than her, David?
Oh, hell, are you a mind reader? Is there a camera in here somewhere, Bonnie, or a microphone?
No.
Or in my head?
It's just that you used to make fun of my voice.
I wasn't actually making fun of it, Bonnie. I told you back then. I said imitation is the what is it? The finest, whatever the
form of
the
flattery.
Form of flattery.
Yeah,
something like that. And Bonnie, because I liked it.
Oh my god. But yeah, actually, I have the camera in there also.
I want to put some clothes on, man. I don't like this, I don't like this invasion of privacy stuff. But yeah, I actually had that thought earlier that I was going to tell the people at Kotex Radio, KTOX, in Needles, California, that I actually way prefer Bonnie's voice to this Kate Daly thing.
That's awesome. Thank you, David.
Yeah.
Was the earliest memory you said you had? That sounds really interesting.
Well, the coolest, I got several actually, and they were from like 18 months old.
Wow.
And, yeah, and the coolest one was, cause this blows me away. It's like, I was in the living room one day, you know, and pictured, I mean, this is like way back, you know, however old I am. It was that long ago. And, so, you know, everything is like vintage furnishings, vintage decor, vintage everything. And I'm in the living room. There's a TV on the TV stand over there, and you got your, you know, couch and your lamps and whatever. And I just had this thought. I was looking at the electrical outlet, and I'm like, the thought I had was, why does the electricity have to go through the wire in the wall? Why can't it just go through the air to what you want to power on, you know, like the TV?
Huh.
Wow.
So how's that for 18 months old?
That's crazy.
Yeah. And flash forward, all these years, and now they actually do that, like with wireless charging for your phone.
Wow. Yeah. So David was probably Tesla in a past life. Nikola Tesla.
I was going to say, I mean, I don't know about that, what's impressive is having that at that age, you know, where does that come from? Did you have some past life where you were involved with electricity? You know, what was it? But obviously, Nikola Tesla was actually talking about electricity going through the air instead of through a wire. He was actually experimenting with that, you know, however many decades before I was even born.
Right. That's why I said that. It makes me think maybe there's something that you carried over from, if not a past life, because some people don't even necessarily believe in that. It could even just be like whatever you were, your consciousness couldn't have possibly just appeared out of nowhere. We know that things don't appear out of nowhere. Maybe your consciousness existed in another realm and it knew things like that were possible, and you were just like still holding on to a little bit of that. Does that make sense?
I've had that thought. I honestly have no idea how can I know any of that? But that is a thought that I've had, is if that's a possibility of how that happens.
Wow. What was the other one? Didn't you say you have more than one?
Yeah, well, in that same vein, I actually still have a baby spoon, or actually my mom has it, and it has a silver baby spoon, and it has a nick burned out of it where I had stuck it in the outlet trying to experiment with electricity.
Oh my gosh.
And that was in that same 18 months. And then the way that I found out that I was that young was, I was telling my mom a while back about a dream that I had had. I wanted to ask her about it, see if she knew anything about it. I said, I had this dream when I was, you know, like 18 months old, 2 years, whatever it was. And that I was outside in the yard, and this huge wind just came up out of nowhere. And, you know, as a toddler that had just started to walk, I was trying to make my way back to the door of the house. And I was literally like having to lean into the wind, like literally like a, I don't know, maybe almost a 45 degree angle, if you can picture that.
Wow.
In order to not get blown over backwards. And she got this really blank look on her face, and her mouth dropped open, and she goes, "You remember that?" And it turns out it wasn't a dream. It had actually happened.
Wow.
Wow. Interesting.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And I didn't know that, you know, until 10, 15 years ago that I had that conversation. I didn't know I had thoughts that went back that early until I had that conversation.
That's really, really cool. Thank you for the call, David.
Here's a quick good one for you. I just in that same time frame, I feel like I was born an adult, and you know, I've deteriorated since then. You know, I've gone back to being more of a child. But because one thing I did at that same time, I was sitting in my high chair at the breakfast table, and my mom asked me if I wanted more milk, and I said, yeah, half a glass. And so she started pouring the milk, and I had this, and I knew, I predicted that when she got to half a glass, she ain't going to stop. And so what I did is I had this plan before she ever got to half a glass. I said, when she gets to half a glass, I'm going to pull my glass out from under the milk.
Oh, no.
And so I did, and she kept pouring the milk onto the table and got really mad at me.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
That's so funny. It's just so funny how everybody's brains work differently. And thank you for the call, David. He brought that up because in the last segment, we were talking about the possibility that baby's consciousness is already inside them when they're in utero or before they were conceived, or did it just appear inside of them one day when they're like 3 years old? I know that there's this one YouTuber lady, and I'm not going to remember her channel. It was so out there, deep in the rabbit hole, like not a whole lot of followers. And my older sister likes to follow her. Well, she claims that she remembers popping into her body at 5 years old, and she said she thinks whoever was in that body before got the heck out of it because
what?
Her childhood was so miserable, and for whatever reason, she got plopped in.
That's weird.
That is kind of weird.
You would think that they would just, like, die and reset.
Yeah.
I don't know what
can
to
you
think
just,
about
like,
that.
Eject your soul?
I have
that's
no idea.
Crazy.
That is really fascinating.
She's crazy. So.
Because to me, that doesn't sound right to me in my intuition, but, like, I'm not saying she's wrong.
Yeah, that's just what she thinks happened. But so, Nikki, you had a story that you brought in tonight that is talking about people's unhealthy obsession with sickness.
Yes, so this is from the Washington Post. And an unhealthy obsession with sickness increases the risk of dying.
Hmm.
I liked this one for our Wednesday night shows because it kind of goes along with a lot of what we typically talk about with, like, law of attraction, manifestation, how your mind creates your reality. And I believe that our body and our cells are always constantly listening to us and our thoughts. And of course, it makes a difference what you fuel your body with and, you know, physically, like what you're eating and exercising and all of that. But I also do think that so much of sickness is cultivated from the mind. And this just kind of goes hand in hand with that a little bit. So the article goes on to say two Swedish people who were examined in a recent study had similar backgrounds. They were both born in the same year and lived in the same country, or in the same county, rather. But one of them, a diagnosed hypochondriac, was much more likely to die of a serious illness.
And if the listeners don't know what that is, a hypochondriac is someone who constantly is thinking, oh, I'm sick, I'm going to get sick, being obsessed with being sick.
Yes. Yeah. Constantly worried that they have some illness. So Swedish researchers studied people with and without I don't know if I'm going to be able to pronounce this. Hypochondriasis, also known as illness anxiety disorder, a diagnosis given to people who are paranoid about being or becoming sick.
Huh.
The study, published this month in the JAMA Psychiatric Journal, found that people diagnosed with hypochondriasis.
I've never heard it that way. I've only ever heard the word
hypochondriac. Yeah. Hypochondriasis is how it's spelled, were 84% more likely than people without the disorder to die of dozens of conditions, especially heart, blood, and lung diseases, as well as suicide. And part of me wonders, too, because we all know that person who's like refuses to go to the doctor just because they're like, I think there might be something wrong with me, and I just don't want to know.
Hmm.
But I also think that, to a certain extent, I think if you go to the doctors, maybe they will find something wrong with you.
Hmm.
And I do believe that our body has an innate ability to heal itself. You know, obviously, like, we need to help it out a little bit.
Oh,
but
for
I
sure.
do think there are so many illnesses that we have that might be underlying that we could heal ourselves of. But if you go to the doctors and they run a test and they find it, then they might pump you full of medications and they may give you all these treatments.
Give you the idea that it's, oh, untreatable or blah, blah, blah.
Or something. Or yeah, who knows? So I'm very convinced that certain things, this is very controversial, but I say it a lot, I'm very convinced that a lot of the treatments for a lot of these illnesses, especially things like cancer, where they're giving people chemotherapy, which is literally poisoning your body, I'm convinced that it is the treatment that kills people, and it is not always the disease. And I'm not going to say that no one has ever died from a disease before, and I'm not going to say that, you know, like medical intervention and medications is always bad. I'm just saying maybe if, you know, maybe if the thought isn't implanted in your head, maybe your body will just heal whatever's going on with you, and you can continue on without this diagnosis.
There's all kinds of studies about this. Go ahead, Riley.
So it sounds like there might be a mind-body connection. Like if you're thinking something, your mind's going to project this into your body, and your body's going to be like, yeah, I'm gonna project that for you.
So I believe that.
The article goes on to say it's kind of a paradoxical finding, isn't it? Researcher David Myatics-Coles told The Washington Post. They worry so much about health and death, and then they end up having a higher risk of death anyways. Previous research has found that people diagnosed with mental disorders are more likely to die at a younger age than those without the disorders. So this goes beyond this, you know, illness, anxiety, being a hypochondriac. This goes with, like, any mental disorder. And I'm sure, like, if you're depressed or anxious, like, that has to wreak havoc on your body. I mean, they say they even like, heart doctors, like, cardiologists will tell you, stress is the worst thing for your heart. If you are stressed out, if you work a stressful job, doesn't matter what you eat, doesn't matter how much you exercise, you are more likely to die of a heart attack or heart disease.
This could be why Jesus says, don't worry about what clothes you're going to wear every day. Don't worry about what you're going to eat every day.
Yeah.
And then he points out, do the birds worry about what they're going to eat? No. Do the flowers worry about how they're going to be dressed? No. But look how they're taken care of.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's just because what can worrying do for you? Nothing. It can only hurt you.
Worry doesn't take away the sorrow tomorrow. It just affects you how you live today.
Yeah, exactly. It just takes away the peace that you have today.
Yep.
So this researcher goes on to say, I got lost. So Myatics-Coles said he had wondered if it would also be the case for hypochondriacs, prompting his research. So that was already a finding that just in general, if you have mental disorders, that you're more likely to die at a younger age. So he was wondering if that would be the same with hypochondriacs. So Myatics-Coles said many hypochondriacs remain paranoid even if doctors assure them that they're healthy. Searching for information about their symptoms on the internet can also worsen a patient's anxiety. They experience a lot of suffering and hopelessness. About
Googling.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a hypochondriac, but when I am sick and I'm like, well, what if it's this? And I Google.
Never good. Never good. So about a year ago, researchers began gathering data from Swedish census and health databases between 1997 and 2020. They identified 4,129 people who were diagnosed with hypochondriasis and compared each person to a group of 10 people who didn't have hypochondriasis but had the same sex, birth year, and county of residence. Researchers also considered marital status, education level, and family income. So sounds like a pretty good in-depth research study.
Yep.
Over roughly 9 months of observation, 268 hypochondriacs and 1,761 people without hypochondriasis died. The hypochondriasis died about 5 years younger on average than those without hypochondriasis. Researchers also found that hypochondriasis can impact quality of life. Of course it does.
Yep.
People without hypochondriasis were more likely to be educated, married, and make more money than the hypochondriacs.
Huh. Wow.
And I think that could probably be the same for a lot of mental illnesses. You know what I mean? I'm bipolar, depression and anxiety. I mean, it's a lot of these mental illnesses, it's it's kind of hard to build relationships all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it would be more difficult, at least, I think, if you're sitting around worried about everything all day to, like, go out and meet someone.
And like, you're so worried about your illnesses. I mean, like, that's your main focus. So I could see.
Or just, like, regular anxiety. Like, you meet someone and then, like, it's hard to connect because you're like, oh, I think that they hate me. I think they're mad at me or something.
Yeah, imagine having social anxiety, trying to find a partner. Yeah, that must be pretty hard, I think. So hypochondriasis is underdiagnosed, Mateusz Cole said. So the risks of death could be even higher when accounting for undiagnosed cases.
I'm surprised that's underdiagnosed. I feel like there's so many people that at least they have that.
Yeah, but I would think maybe it might look bad if you're going to the doctor all the time and the doctor's like, hypochondriac, and like puts that as a diagnosis in their medical record. Like, it might feel, because the hypochondriacs, they're already like, the doctor is always blowing me off. I have all of these symptoms. I'm sick. I'm dying. And the doctors are just blowing me off.
Wow.
So if they were to put that in the chart,
crazy.
Yeah, like, no, you're just a hypochondriac. I'm sure some doctors totally would.
They might not want to because they're like, yeah, keep coming back.
Yeah,
when you're worried.
I mean, yeah, depending, yeah.
I think it's always good to be aware of your symptoms and go to the doctor if you need to. But, you know, there's a point in which it's paranoia, and I think it's got to be up to the individual to figure out, okay, what's paranoia and what's not. And
it's hard.
It's balance we were talking about earlier. There probably are some people that are so unaware of what's going on in their body that they're just like, ow, ow, and they're not even thinking about it.
Yeah.
So there could be another end of the spectrum.
And of course, like, we've all heard of stories where people are going to the doctors, like, I have these, like, legit symptoms, and the doctor's like, yeah, I think you just have anxiety.
You're fine.
And they're like going, so, like,
then I have a baby in the toilet.
Yeah, or something, you know what I mean?
Man.
Yeah, like, these things happen where, and then finally someone finds a doctor that actually listens to them, or some sort of healthcare provider, or, like, somebody to finally listen to them, and then it turns out they have something going on that none of the other doctors could or would diagnose.
Sure, and I think that's important to think about, too, is, you know, some people may have unexplained illnesses that doctors don't know anything about, and doctors might just blow them off for a while, and then all of a sudden this doctor comes along. And
that could probably give you hypochondriasis.
Yeah. So there's a tendency to perhaps debase their worries about their health as being made up. Mateusz Cole said he has a few theories about these findings. Hypochondriacs' life might be shorter because of chronic stress, which might also cause them to self-medicate with alcohol and drugs.
Wow.
He said some patients might...
That'll make you feel better.
I know,
and
right?
be more healthy.
He said some patients might avoid visiting doctors out of fear that they'll be diagnosed with a serious illness.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like the opposite of my theory, I guess, from earlier. But, this sounds like he's just, I don't think this is anything that is actually coming from the findings. Yeah, these are just his theories. But Mateusz Cole hopes to learn more about hypochondriasis, such as how the disorder impacts patients' abilities to pursue education and careers. For now, he said that the more attention and resources should go into caring for people with this illness, which can be treated through cognitive behavioral therapy and antidepressants.
Oh, no.
That'll not make you feel good.
Yeah, well, it'll not make you feel.
Yeah, that'll not make you feel.
I guess it depends on the person. Some people might find it beneficial to take, like, an SSRI, but I don't think prescribing them to everybody is always a good idea.
I agree. Like, I can't say that I know that there's no one that it would help. I just really believe that if it's not your last thing to do, like, you haven't gone in, like, exercise, like, lost weight, started making friends, just change something huge in your life, take some psychedelics, and you haven't done that, and you're just like, oh, give me
people
antidepressants.
People don't want to do the work.
Right.
And I think a lot of, like, depression and anxiety, a lot of physical illness, and, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, many people deal with, it takes a lot of work to get through those things.
Oh, of course
and
it does.
And most people don't want to do the work, and I think it's easier for most people to take a pill. Maybe it'll work for them, maybe it won't, but I do firmly believe there are always other ways that people can get through whatever they're going through, but it's also, like, not for me to decide whether, You know what I mean? Like, if somebody doesn't want to make these, like, massive fundamental changes to their lives, like...
that are hard.
Yeah. Like, it's really none of my business, and if you want to be on antidepressants or whatever, like, that's... I mean, that's up to them. I do think they should be available for people that want them.
Yeah.
And I don't think they should be regulated.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, we have this article from Zero Hedge I wanted to quickly get into because it's pretty hilarious that Riley brought in. It says, King Charles delivers highly politicized speech to support collectivist net zero project.
So a man with a magical title says some things about a project.
Yes, a collectivist project. Yep. It's a net zero, I think, is, we're going to no longer put out any carbon emissions from our country, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to...
How is that possible?
Yeah, how is that possible? We all breathe carbon.
It says, King Charles is no friend of general humanity. Speaking at COP28, he said, the Earth does not belong to us. We belong to the Earth.
I mean, I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, right.
But
I don't like that he's saying it.
But he took a private jet to get there.
Oh, yeah, he took a private jet.
They all do.
And then also the fact that he says the Earth does not belong to us reeks of he doesn't believe in private property. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
As with many know-your-place elitists, he appears to abhor the impacts that humans have on the planet. He exhibits, sadly, on a world stage, a snobbish disdain for capitalism, what used to be dismissed in British aristocratic circles as trade. This capitalist trend over the last 200 years has harnessed the power of natural hydrocarbons to raise billions to a standard of living and health unimaginable to previous generations. In 2009, Charles said we can no longer afford consumerism and the age of convenience was over.
Mm.
Wow, so he's not a psychic. Not for the new British king, it need hardly be observed. He lives a life of pampered indulgence where no expense is spared to ensure his every comfort. And that's quite ironic.
Oh yeah, because he wants to preach to you about the environment while he lives in relative comfort and he can fly everywhere he wants to fly.
There's always an exemption for the royals.
Oh, of course there is.
This has been Free Talk Live. Thank you so much. We'll be back live tomorrow. Peace. You can go to our website, freetalklive.com, if you want more.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. You're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.